Thank you, thank you, thank you. What a pleasure to have you guys here today. So, welcome again to Unity Spiritual Center in the Rockies, where we are continuing our series on masters, mystics, and metaphysicians. Today we're talking about a Zen Buddhist master named Thich Nhat Hanh, who was born in 1926 in Vietnam. He's 91 years old today, still alive, living in France in Hermitage at Plum Village. In 2014, he had a stroke. And until 2016, he was in rehab, and now he's living at the village. He is partially paralyzed and unable to speak, which is very interesting because on his 80th birthday, he made a statement, and his statement was, "When I can no longer speak, I will teach by my being." Yeah, pretty phenomenal. So this man was born in 1926 in Vietnam, and at the age of 7, he saw a magazine cover with a picture of the Buddha on it. And he looked at that picture and saw such peace. And remember, he was living in a country that was engaged in civil unrest, right? It didn't just start when we got involved. It had been going on for a long time. There was a lot of unrest in the country, and all around him, he saw violence. And on the magazine cover, he saw peace. And at 7 years old, he knew that's what he wanted. And so he decided at 7 years old that he wanted to be a monk. And his parents were very reluctant to even entertain that conversation because the life of a monk is not easy. When you are a monk, a Zen monk, you give up everything. You have no belongings. You count on the people around you for your very food. None of that, nothing belongs to you. It's a difficult life. But he was committed, and his commitment had not changed by the time he was 16 years old. So at 16 years old, he joined a monastery, and he studied, and he practiced, and he came to some teachings that have been world-changing. He has influenced the entire world with what he had to say, but he influenced Vietnam first. He was kind of a little bit of a, what do you call that? Not quite like everybody else. So an example of that is, at that time, and remember, he was born in 26, and went into the monastery at 16. So this was still quite a bit back in our history. At that time, the monks in Vietnam rode around on horses. And that was not suitable for him. He decided he wanted to ride a bicycle. And so he enlisted 5 other friends to join him. And they went and rented bicycles and practiced on them until they could use them and then convinced people that the monks ought to be able to ride bicycles. And it changed everything. Now that's a very common method of transportation for monks. But it wasn't then. He just had a vision that things could be different. He had such a vision that he formed a school called the School of Youth for Social Services. And he enlisted 10,000 students to go out into Vietnam and to assist people who'd had their homes bombed, who were struggling with food, who were living in a war-torn country. And what was unique about what he did, and it also got him in a little bit of trouble, was that he wouldn't take sides. He wouldn't stand with the communist North, and he wouldn't stand with the anti-communist South. He stood in the middle, in the place of addressing suffering. So one of the things that's interesting to me about what happens at Unity Spiritual Center is that we work really on our positive approach to life, don't we? We really look at life through a positive lens. And sometimes because we're doing that, when we say a word like suffer, we kind of cringe a little bit. That's not one of our words. We don't use that word, do we? But just out of curiosity, do any of you suffer? We do suffer, don't we? His teachings are designed to address suffering. So before I tell you any more about him, I'd like to have you watch the screen and hear his words.
you refer to, I can't remember which book, but you talk about deep listening also.
Deep listening is the kind of listening that can help relieve the suffering of the other person. You can call it compassionate listening. You listen with only one purpose, help him or her to empty his heart. And if you remember that you are helping him or her to suffer less, and then even if he say things full of wrong perceptions, full of bitterness, you are still capable to continue to listen with compassion. Because you know that listening like that, with compassion, you give him or her a chance to suffer less. If you want to help him or her to correct his perception, and then you wait for another time, but for this, the time being, you just listen with compassion and help him or her to suffer less. And 1 hour like that can bring transformation and healing.
So I love this idea of deep listening, because oftentimes when someone comes to you and they want to really vent, they want to purge whatever is going on inside them, people start talking and giving advice. So if you allow the person just to let whatever those feelings are to come out, and then at another time come back to them with your advice or your comments, you would experience a deeper healing. That's what you're saying.
Yes. The fear, the anger, and the despair is born on the ground of wrong perception. And we have wrong perceptions concerning ourselves and the other person. And that is the foundation for conflict and war and violence.
You've said that the only way we can begin to end war is due to communication between people.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we should be able to say like this, dear friends, dear people, I know that you suffer a lot. I have not understood enough of your difficulties and suffering. It's not our intention to make you suffer more. It is the opposite. So please tell us about your suffering, your difficulties. I'm eager to learn to understand. You have to start like that, loving speech. And if you are honest, if you are true, they will open their heart and tell us. And then we practice compassionate, deep listening. And during the process of deep listening, we can learn so much about our own perception and their perception. Mm-hmm. And that is the best way, the only way to remove terrorism.
Terrorism or even difficulties between yourself and
yes.
family members or friends.
Yes.
And the principle is the same no matter the conflict.
Yes.
Terrorists, anti-terrorists,
yes.
father and son.
Right.
Yourself and your boss.
Right.
Yourself and your children, your best friend.
Yes.
So we could stop there, couldn't we? That right there is enough of a lesson to take home, isn't it? That we might practice deep listening. Listening that's not based on responding at all, but simply creating a space in which someone could empty their heart. That is only one of the many teachings that Thich Nhat Hanh offers. So you notice that he's wearing a brown robe. When he was 16, the ordinates before their ceremony wear a gray robe, and they get their brown robe as part of their ordination. So the night before he was to be ordained, he was in the monastery with a friend, and they noticed a light burning. And so they left their room and walked down the hallway. Now, at that time, there wasn't electricity in the monastery. The lights that burned were kerosene. So they were very judicious about not using the oil, about not burning lamps unless they really needed to. And that made the young ordinance curious. So they got up and they walked down the hall, and they found their master sitting in his room next to a stack of books, very slowly, very meticulously sewing a brown robe, sewing to repair a hole in the robe. And after watching for a few minutes and whispering a bit amongst themselves, they said to him, "Teacher, it's very late, and we have a big day tomorrow. Perhaps you could do that another time. Please take care of yourself. Please get some rest." And he said to them, "Have you ever heard the story about sewing?" And he began to tell them a story as he stitched about the prayer that belonged to every stitch that was pulled through the fabric, about the blessing that came when we were aware of our ability to heal, to make things whole, about the importance of putting love into each action, each step that we take. And when he was done, as they stood and listened to the lesson and watched him, he finished up with the thread and he handed the robe to Thich Nhat Hanh, and that was the robe in which he was ordained, which makes me emotional to even talk about the power of a few stitches. What can happen when you slow down your life and are present in this moment and really put your heart into what you do? So Thay says he had many, many robes over the years, but that robe was the most important to him, not so much because it was the robe he was ordained in, not because it was the perfect robe, because it didn't fit him perfectly, but because pure love was gifted in what he did. And it taught him something that is the foundation for what he teaches in the world, which is the importance of being present in this moment to all the little things that happen. So he was ordained in the monastery, as I said, that he had joined at 16. In 1966, he came to the United States, and he came here to study comparative religions at Princeton, and he also came to speak out to the world against war and violence, specifically against American involvement in the Vietnam War. And he wrote a letter to Martin Luther King about it. He just sent the letter, never thought any more about it. In 1967, he had the opportunity to meet Martin Luther King and to have a 45-minute conversation with him. And that 45-minute conversation was so powerful that King came out of the conversation, called a press conference, and spoke against the Vietnam War to the press. Very impressive for a man of such mild demeanor. They became very good friends, and ultimately Martin Luther King nominated him for a Nobel Peace Prize. In 1973, when the Paris Peace Accord was passed, he was no longer able, he was exiled from his country. So from 1973 to 2005, he could not go home. He was not allowed in his country because he spoke out against the government there and against the war and the violence. He founded an organization that practices something called interbeing. And I want to explain to you what that is by asking you to look at these flowers back here. These were brought in by Donnie yesterday. I'll hold them up for you guys over there like, what flowers? There are no flowers. No, there really are. These beautiful flowers. So these flowers, when we look at them, are very present in the moment, aren't they? And we could just look at them and say, look at those beautiful sunflowers. Aren't they lovely? But these flowers, being here in this moment, are part of the process of interbeing. Somewhere along the line, a seed hit the ground. The soil accepted the seed. Somewhere along the line, water was applied, somehow by nature or by someone. Somewhere along the line, that little sprout that came up through the ground was called by the sun, by the warmth of the ground that called it upward. Somewhere along the line, some lovely little creature of the planet pollinated those flowers. Somewhere along the line, some gardener tenderly cut the stalks and packaged them, and sweet hands of this community brought them here, didn't they? That they are here in this moment is much more than just the presence of flowers. It's the presence of interbeing. It is the working of all things that are connected that brings them to this moment. And so there's a richness and a depth to their presence that is important in life. And the same is true about you. You are a gift of the cosmos that is the creation, the combination of many factors, your mother and your father and your grandparents and your ancestors, the teachers who taught you, the food that was grown to nourish your body, the people who have loved you and cultivated you, who have cared for you, the home that has sheltered you, all the hands it took for the materials that make that shelter to have been present to you, all the small little amounts of spice that went in the food you ate, all of that is part of who you are right now, isn't it? You are a wonder of the cosmos, the perfect combination to bring forth you. And that practice of interbeing, that understanding of interbeing, is his greatest teaching. His greatest teaching is that we look at life fully, that we be present in this moment to what it took to get to this moment, and that we look deeply at everything we encounter. We look deeply at the blue sky above us. We look deeply at everything we encounter to see how it got there and what it brings to us. That the steps that we take are slow and steady, careful, that we are aware we're walking on the earth. We are aware of our impact. And that these are the things that we do to bring ourselves to peace in a world that is not peaceful. How many of you would say you are affected by the conflict and chaos in our world? And it doesn't matter what side you take, does it? You are affected. He wrote this book in 2016. It's called At Home in the World. And I just want to read two little paragraphs to you. Once I was walking with many people in Philadelphia as part of a demonstration to stop the war in Vietnam. A reporter came to me and asked, "Are you from the North or are you from the South?" To him, if I was from the North, I would be anti-American, a communist. If I was from the South, I would be anti-communist. I was walking mindfully and he was holding out the microphone. I stopped for a second and I said, "I'm from the center." Sometimes people have a certain idea or way of looking at things and they want to put you in a box. But what happens if you don't belong in any of the categories in their mind? It's the reality of things that matters and not the word we use to describe it. A name is merely a conventional designation. It's not the reality. We must train ourselves to look deeply into the true nature of reality. So the name sunflower is what we call that. But it is not the nature of the reality, is it? The reality that is that manifestation that we look at as beauty is profoundly more involved and more complex than to simply call it one name. As are you. You are profoundly more complex than your label. So your invitation this week as you move forward is to consider the labels you have taken on. How have you named yourself in a way that does not reflect all of who you are, all of what you bring forth in the world, all the ways that you are the perfect expression of God? I'll leave you with that question. We'll talk more about it as we move on through the month. I have a couple quotes for you. These are all by Thay, by Thich Nhat Hanh. Thay is what he's called by his students. The first is this: do not lose yourself in the past. Do not lose yourself in the future. Do not get caught in your anger or your worries or your fears. Come back to the present moment and touch life deeply. This is mindfulness. The next is this: the purpose of a rose is to be a rose. Your purpose is to be yourself. You don't have to run anywhere to become someone else. You are wonderful just as you are. And this last one is one I want to speak to you, and then we're going to say the first line of it back together, because it's the piece for you to take into practice. How many times do you think you breathe in a week? Thank you. Here's the quote. "Breathing in, I calm body and mind. Breathing out, I smile. Breathing in, I calm body and mind. Breathing out, I smile.